Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Rick Chandler, the Chief Information Officer of the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review. Rick, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with some basics. The mission of the Justice Department's Office for Immigration Review. Now, it's for immigration review, not of immigration review. You've got to make sure we're clear on that. But give me a sense, what is your mission? How do you support and how do you work within the Justice Department?
The primary mission of the Executive Office for Immigration Review, or EOIR, is to adjudicate immigration cases fairly, expeditiously, and uniformly, interpreting and administering the nation's immigration laws. Essentially, we're the immigration courts for the federal government, but we are part of the executive branch under the Department of Justice, which is separates us from other federal court systems.
Do you have a closer relationship from a bureau perspective with, for instance, Homeland Security, the Immigration Customs Enforcement, or is that separate and maybe people start there and then come to you afterwards?
Yes, yeah, so DHS is a separate, obviously, under Homeland Security. We interact with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Citizenship and Immigration Services of DHS. ICE acts as the prosecutor in the cases, and just like the alien or their a representative is a party in the case.
So you are the Chief Information Officer of EOIR. I love the name. I'm sure that's you guys get a lot of kick out of that. How do you support that mission of the agency?
Well, it's the pretty typical stuff that you would expect from a CIO. Obviously, all the technology that is supporting the agency, equipment, help desk, telecommunications, application development, all that kind of stuff that's fairly standard for a CIO.
Do you find yourself that you're more on the operational side or more of the strategic side or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. I'm not a technologist by training. I really got this job because I knew the immigration business. I worked at INS and ICE previous to coming to EOIR. So I had an experience with the immigration process, and they were looking for a CIO that could translate the business processes that they have here to the technologists and vice versa.
So I imagine that means you probably have a deputy or an assistant CIO that does a lot of the day-to-day who is the tech person.
Yeah, I have, as far as direct reports, I have a deputy CIO for my infrastructure who handles the help desk, system administration, hardware, all that kind of stuff, a deputy CIO for software development, and then a chief technology officer.
So that means you're probably more on the strategic side, how do we make sure that the technology is meeting the mission? Is that something you prefer? Have you started to kind of get into the tech side a little bit?
I get more involved than some of the bigger agency CIOs, perhaps, in the day-to-day operational decisions, participating in some of the discussions related to requirements with building a system. But that's the nature of being a small agency, is I have my finger on the pulse more of the day-to-day operations as well.
And does it add another layer of challenges or complexity because you're dealing with, if you will, a court system versus just a usual infrastructure, which is, you know, well, do we have enough storage? Do we have enough bandwidth? That types of things?
Certainly. Operating within the Department of Justice or within a legal organization, we have a lot of requirements that other agencies may not have, you know, relating to records retention, the legal aspects of, as we try to implement technology, then you run into, well, what are some of the legal impediments that we have associated with that? And obviously, being part of the Department of Justice, we have a lot of lawyers who like to give their opinion on how to implement the technology. And it's useful because those are not things that we think of necessarily as the technologists. As the technologists, we want to just solve problems and meet the customer needs. But obviously, there's a reason that we have the lawyers here, and we work well with our general counsel's office to, and obviously within the court system and our appellate bureau, we have attorneys within those divisions that are thinking about the legal aspects that we don't necessarily think of.
And then there's the whole security and privacy piece that just is across anything you do as a CIO. I'm sure that plays also a big role because of the amount of data that you get in and even are able to share publicly.
Sure. Obviously, all the things that we do related to hearings are PII. And because we handle asylum cases and things like that, even though they're not classified, they're certainly sensitive, and we need to protect that information more so than just unclassified, regular unclassified information.
You talked a little bit about your office. You talked about the makeup in terms of the deputies and the CTO, but give me a sense of how many people do you have in the IT office, how many contractors in terms of work for you on maybe on a regular basis, and roughly what was your IT budget for 2012?
So I have 34 government positions here and about 110 contractors that support the IT operations here at EOIR. This year, we have a $31 million IT budget to support the agency, and that goes to supporting about 1,500 government and contractors across the agency in about 65 locations, and I'd say nationwide, but we have an office in Saipan in the Northern Marianas Islands, and so we have equipment and support issues as far away as Saipan to Puerto Rico.
Your ratio from government employees to contractors is 3-1, almost 4-1. Is that a good ratio? I hear a lot from CIOs who say, well, I want to bring my ratio lower. I want more government employees. We went too far maybe with contractors. Or, no, my ratio is actually in pretty good shape. How do you see it?
It's something I've been struggling with for years, is trying to figure out what is the right mix. I don't think it's where I want it, but I don't have a hard and set number that I'm trying to get to. It's something that we have to look at over the next couple of years. There's been a lot that's come out from OMB about the right sizing of the IT workforce, if you will. The key component to that, though, is I think the one of the reasons the pendulum has swung in the last decade is the ability to keep our skills up to date on the government side. And so that's why a lot of people have moved to contractors in the last decade, is because we weren't keeping our employees' skills up to date. So if you can't do that and you need those skills, then obviously you need to find a way to solve that mission. But, you know, I think that we're going to be moving in, and this isn't just EOIR, it's the Department of Justice, it's the government in general, is going to be moving to a higher ratio of government employees. But what that right number is, I think even once we get there, it'll change depending on the type of projects that you're running.
One of the things you mentioned about your office is that you do some application development. Is that done in-house, or do you, again, is that part of a contractor government mix who kind of share that work?
Mostly it's done by contractors. The immigration courts is a unique court system. It's not like local civil court or criminal court, where even though the laws might be different, the processes are essentially the same from court to court. There's only one immigration court. So we do a lot of custom development here to support our mission.
And so that means no commercial off the shelf. That makes it much harder. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Chandler, the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review's Chief Information Officer.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Chandler, the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review's Chief Information Officer. Now, Rick, before break, we talked a little bit about how you support that mission of the EOIR, as well as the makeup of your office. But let's get into your priorities. Over the next 6 or 9 months, what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, the big project that we have going on right now is related to moving towards electronic filing. It's something that's been done out in the state and local court system, but we're looking to implement through a iterative rollout of capabilities. The thing that we're working on now is called e-registration, the ability for private bar attorneys to be able to register with us to be able to eventually file documents and forms electronically through our court system. This has been part of the agency's e-world initiative for several years. The project that we're getting ready to wrap up this summer has been the probably what would be considered the third phase of eWorld, and that's called e-transcription. We record all of our hearings out in our immigration courts, so we don't have stenographers or transcribers in the courtrooms during the hearings. So we record those digitally, and in the past, what we would do is we would send out the CDs with the recordings to a transcription company and get those back in paper, a transcribed file. Now what we're doing is working with our vendors to digitally send the, since we have the file digitally, send the digital file of the recording out to the vendor and to receive electronic copies of the transcripts back. And we're finding that that's a real way to improve our business processes, both in quality assurance and reviewing the transcribed files when they come back, as well as automating our invoicing processing for that work. As I mentioned, this is really kind of the third phase of eWorld. The first phase was to build our case management system, which was done about 7 years ago, build a new case management, get off a mainframe, get into a web-based case management system. The second phase was the digital audio recording. We have about 330 courtrooms nationwide deploying the digital audio recording equipment, both hardware and the software. It took several years. It was a very expensive project. That was a big win for us when we finished that up in 2010. That was we finished that project on time and under budget. So now the logical next step was, now that we have digital recordings, let's take those, send them out to our vendors, get digital transcriptions back. Other things that we're focusing on for the next 6 to 9 months is our infrastructure. Like most agencies, sometimes you run hardware and software until it runs into the ground. And we want to try to get ahead of that. So we're working to upgrade, you know, things like our mail servers. A lot of the server software that we're running, last year we finished a project to upgrade our SQL database servers. So we're not always staying up with the latest technology. Windows 8 is about ready to roll out here this summer, and we're only beginning to roll out Windows 7 this year. So we're not on the bleeding edge, but we don't want to be left behind either.
So let me jump in there. A couple things I want to touch base on. I think from an outsider's perspective, you say, well, we're just getting into e-filing, e-transcription. That seems to be something that should have been done 3, 4, 5, even 7 years ago. Was there a reason why? Is there a legal reason or just a process reason why you guys are just getting to it now?
There's process issues associated with us trying to figure out how to move our paper-based processes into digital world. There's been budget issues over the last decade, not just within the Department of Justice, but also the interaction of our customer. You know, one of our customers is DHS, and they've been struggling to be created. And I was there when ICE was formed in 2003. So there's a lot of reasons. We got to make sure we do it right. When we do it the first time, it has to be right. We have about 50,000 private bar attorneys who are interacting with us in cases, in about 250,000 cases a year before our courts. So, you know, we can't afford to get it wrong the first time.
Interesting that you talked about a case management system that was done about 7 years ago. I know that other agencies have struggled with the case management system. Then you talk about putting digital record audio in the courtrooms. Each of these steps have the phases for the program. eWorld, is the digital transcription and e-filing, are those the last two phases of that, or there's more after that as well?
There's more. As we roll out e-filing, it's not going to be all of the motions and documents and forms that you can file with us all at once. We're going to do this as a phased iterative approach to rolling out different capabilities. You know, we want to get away from the government model of collect all the requirements for several years and then spend many more years trying to build the entire system, because that doesn't work. You know, I was on the Sentinel project at FBI. That eventually moved to an agile development process and try to deliver a little bit of capability every couple of months, every 3, 4, even 6 months, but get out of the habit of, okay, you're not going to get anything new for 2 years.
Where do you see going next? Are there certain areas that you would like to improve upon next when it comes to this idea of the eWorld?
Well, as you know, recently OMB has come out with portfolio stat requirements, and so heavily involved in meeting with other CIOs within the Department of Justice, as well as the Department of Justice's CIO's office, to understand commodity services and the direction that OMB is heading in the portfolio stat. And how does that play in with what we're trying to do from a mission perspective, and maybe put some things on hold as we as the Department of Justice try to figure out what does commodity IT mean within the Department of Justice, so that we're not off doing our own thing that is contrary to where we're trying to head as a department.
Talk a little bit about that portfolio stat, because I think it meshes well with one of your other priorities about infrastructure and trying to improve it, because a lot of the things you talked about from an infrastructure standpoint is the commodity IT, specifically you mentioned mail servers and such. Have you guys already started meeting around PortfolioStat yet? And can you give me a sense of how that's working?
Yeah, we have had a lot of meetings in the last couple of weeks, and there's some deliverables to the Deputy Attorney General, and he is the person that is managing this process within the Department of Justice, and will eventually meet with OMB in the July timeframe to begin to discuss with them what our initial takeaway is for the PortfolioStat process. Yeah, I did mention that we're looking at upgrading our mail servers, and we know that somewhere down the road we need to be going to a department-wide commodity for email, but we're at a point where we can't stop what we're doing now, but what we're doing now has to be at least in line with the path we think we're going to go with commodity email within the Department of Justice. Department of Justice is, you know, we're law enforcement and legal for the government. So we have some requirements that maybe other agencies don't have when it comes to email. And so many of our systems within the Department of Justice, not necessarily EOIR, are at FISMA high levels. And right now, in some of the research we've done, there aren't many vendors that can meet that requirement for us. That's not to say if we don't go out there with as big as the Department of Justice is and say, that's our requirement, can you meet it, that vendors won't line up. But right now, there aren't. And those are things that we need to take into consideration of, you know, antitrust lawyers and law enforcement agencies. You know, even though it's unclassified email systems that we're talking about here, there's still sensitivity. And we have to figure out what we're comfortable with from a Department of Justice organization of moving to the cloud and moving to vendors for management.
And I think that's also where, for instance, the OMB's shared services strategy comes in, where hey, maybe you're just going to consolidate internally and it's a private cloud. I want to talk about cloud in a second, but give me a sense of the infrastructure changes. Are you guys also looking, for instance, you talked about the upgrade to Windows 7. Does that require you to do other upgrades and other changes to some of the applications so the two can run together well?
Yeah, obviously there are places that things are tightly coupled, and we have a lot of testing going on now with Windows 7. Luckily, last year we upgraded browsers, and so a lot more work is being application development is being done in is web apps. And so last year we had a big project to upgrade to Internet Explorer 8. Now Internet Explorer 9 is out there now, and I'm sure 10 is on the near horizon. But when we did a lot of work last year to bring our web apps in line with IE8, what we're finding now with the testing with IE9 is they're pretty much compatible without any real problems. But we do know some things as we go on to Windows 7. We had some Visual Basic applications that don't play well with Windows 7. So we're working to convert those applications to more modern frameworks and get away from this tightly coupled operating system application issue and get a little more separation in the frameworks.
Very nice. I think we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more priorities, maybe some cloud, maybe some mobile computing. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Chandler, Chief Information Officer of the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rick Chandler, the Chief Information Officer of the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review. Now, Rick, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities, the e-world, the infrastructure upgrades. When you think of infrastructure, you got to think of cloud, and then there's mobile, and there's several other leading-edge or even cutting-edge technologies that you hear a lot about in the federal community. How are you guys looking at some of these?
So we're certainly looking at those. We don't want to be left behind, so to speak, in the technology. But right now, we're not really using cloud computing. I think that's, as a small agency, for us, we need to go with others to the cloud to get the real buying power that we need to make it worth our while. But it's certainly, as I mentioned earlier, talking about the OMB's commodity IT and portfolio stat initiative, this is something that we're definitely looking at and that us, the CIOs within the Department of Justice, are talking about together about what can we do. I think it's not going to be this jump from where we are now directly to the cloud, that there will be some initial steps that we do that we're talking about of how do we co-locate, how do we consolidate, how do we move to virtualized environments so that when we are ready to move to the cloud, we've made it a lot easier for us to do that. Are we upgrading to the latest versions of our infrastructure so that when we get ready to move to the cloud, you know, we're not jumping from 10-year-old infrastructure to the cutting edge. Mobile for us, people come to us, we're the courts. Within the Department of Justice, it's obviously big law enforcement and lawyers who are out there in the courts and out there in the field every day. But for us, people come to us. And the judges sit at a bench and do their work. And the lawyers that we have here that are assisting the judges are working in offices or teleworking. So there is some component of mobile with the teleworkers. We do have a good number of people here at our Board of Immigration Appeals who telework. And so they need to be able to connect remotely. But for us, in a broader mobile context, I think for us, video teleconferencing has been very big. We have about 150 what people would consider conference room size VTC units in our courtrooms nationwide. And we connect to several hundred different Department of Homeland Security's Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention centers so that we can hear cases remotely, saving time and money for both us in our court efficiency, but as well as for Homeland Security. I was at Legacy INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, when we started that 15 years ago, as a way to reduce the cost of transporting aliens to the courtroom and saving security costs and things like that. But it's beneficial for both us on the court side to improve the efficiency, right? A judge can now hear aliens in five different detention locations quickly by changing, you know, almost as easy as changing the channel on the VTC and connecting to another detention center. Last year, with Homeland Security, last calendar year, we used our VTC equipment for 2.7 million minutes of conducting hearings.
That's an incredible amount of minutes before the people would have to be flown in, or the court would have to, they'd have to go to a local court so they'd at least have there's some travel involved. So do you have any kind of estimates in terms of cost savings for the department?
I think most of the cost savings is on the Homeland Security side, but we have saved money. We used to send judges to remote locations to hear cases, and now we can remote to those locations. So for us, it's in the tens and hundreds, low hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings on our side from detailing judges to remote locations. But I think the big issue for both us and Homeland Security has been the security by reducing having to bring, in some cases, criminal aliens into courtrooms, as well as the transportation and security costs of Homeland Security.
From a CIO's perspective, what does that do to your network? Do you have to make sure that, obviously, you need a lot of bandwidth to do video and audio. You need to be able to keep it in quality time so it's not like someone's jumping as they're talking and you're losing part of what they're saying, especially since you have the audio recording piece there too, I'm sure. What does that mean for you as the CIO? How do you ensure that has all the necessary ingredients to make it work?
Yeah, this has been a big project for us the last couple of years. We've integrated our digital audio recording equipment with our video teleconferencing equipment so that it's seamless for the judges. It's as easy as them pressing a couple of buttons to get a hearing underway and to record it. We're recording only the audio, not the video part of it. But we have started moving in the last year and a half away from traditional VTC in the courtrooms of using ISDN lines to putting the video over our network. But before we did that, we wanted to make sure that we kept the quality. You can ensure the quality when you run in four ISDN lines per machine, but the cost is very expensive. So we did a lot of analysis before we started down the move of IP, video over IP, to ensure that we increase the bandwidth at the locations that you do a lot of video there. Some offices do video more than others, especially the remote locations, and we wanted to make sure that they had the bandwidth to do that. We've been discussing with Homeland Security of they've done the same initiative on their side of moving to IP, and it's a challenge. When you're talking two separate networks, using different equipments on either side and connecting those things together. Sometimes it's not as seamless as we'd want it to be. But luckily, we have such a good working relationship with ICE that when issues do pop up, we can get on the phone pretty quickly with them and resolve them. Because what we don't want to do is disrupt the court operations. Cases, we want to move people through the process as fast as possible. So if a VTC goes down in a courtroom, we get those judges and clerks to call us immediately so that we can get that troubleshooting and get that case hopefully reheard within the same day.
You just made the perfect case, by the way, for open standards, for non-proprietary equipment. So I think the people in that community will thank you for making the perfect case. I did want to just go, you kind of answered my question about video over IP. Are you guys already with voice over IP as well? Because those two are definitely connected in terms of what you can do on your network.
Yes. Last year, we finished rolling out VoIP nationwide to all our courts. And again, you want to ensure the quality, right? People over the last 150 years have been accustomed to picking up a phone and getting a dial tone and having quality there when they're making those calls. That's just the norm. And so when you move to a new technology like VoIP that offers a lot more capability and the potential for reducing your costs, you can't make sure that those offset the quality concerns that people have when they're using a phone. And you want it to be as easy as just picking up and dialing a phone number. So we've done things to put the quality of service and class of service requirements into our networking so that our VoIP system is class of service one, so that we ensure that when somebody does pick up the phone to make a call, they have guaranteed quality of service end-to-end on that call. Video is in our class of service too, so that gets priority over other traffic that is traveling across our network.
Well, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to ask the question about vendors and what should they know about working with your office?
I certainly want to understand what's going on in the industry, and I welcome meeting with vendors, but do your research. Know if and how your technology can play in my environment. If you know that I recently bought something or bought a service to meet that need, don't come 2 months behind that and try to sell me something new to support that. I'm open to meeting with vendors. Sometimes I do push that down to my deputies to handle and say, look, if you're interested in meeting this, reach out to them. But I prefer a targeted message to me, not just a canned add my email address to your database and every 2 weeks I get a canned message about your product. The ones that I respond to are the ones that people have said, this is specifically how I think that we can meet your needs.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Sounds like we probably could talk a little bit longer. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Rick Chandler, the Chief Information Officer of the Justice Department's Executive Office for Immigration Review. Rick, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.